Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 27th, 2010. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Joanne Chang.
Hey, everyone.
And our guest host, Carissa Thorpe, and also our technician, John Pranger, who is running the controls. On today's show, we have one lifestyle segment and one feature interview for you. First, I'll be presenting travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating, part three, on Portland, Oregon, based on my last trip there, which was this June for the Let Live Animal Rights Conference. And for our feature interview today, we will have Dr. Donald Forrester on the show from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, here to speak to us about some of the benefits of a plant-based diet and about the PCRM's upcoming 21-day vegan kickstart program. This program is for anyone who wants to explore and experience the benefits of a vegan diet, and we'll be learning about it today. Now, I just wanted to provide an update in regards to an interview we held just a couple of weeks ago with Rick O'Berry, who has been a dolphin activist for nearly 40 years and was the main character featured on the Oscar-winning documentary film The Cove. So do you remember when I was talking to him about his upcoming trip to Tahiti?
Yeah, sounds like it was scary.
1st? Yeah, I remember he wouldn't tell me what their plans were for this trip because of all of the Japanese militant groups that were out to harm him. Do you remember what some of those groups were? I know that you were specifically asking about that.
Yeah, well, it's the government who's after him, the fishermen that are after him, and then the Yakuza, which is a freaky, scary mob in Japan. Like, you can't even say anything about them. They'll just kill you.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it turns out that it was just announced late last week that they now have decided to cancel their plans in Taiji for September 1st, which was the first day of the dolphin slaughter there. We don't know exactly what those plans were, but one can only guess that they are now deemed to be too dangerous to follow through with. And in fact, they received word that an extreme nationalist group known to be violent was set to confront them in Taiji, which is why they decided to cancel their plans. So their new plans now, they have new plans, and they're going to be still going to Japan, but elsewhere, and they will be talking to the media and explaining the problem and making sure that the public understands that they are not there to fight, but to work together with the people of Japan to end the horrific dolphin slaughter. So I guess in a way, their trip is not going to be wasted. They're still going. They're still going to make educational efforts. Oh yeah, they're still going to Japan. They're just not going to be, in Taiji. So.
So as soon as they get there, though, aren't those groups going to be after them anyway?
I think it was just in Taiji. I think when you get into Japan, it's in what's that city's name? Near Tokyo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So. So they're going to be touring, and I think they're just waiting for them in Taiji because they think, like, they're not going to know where they, you know, they're not going to meet them off the plane. Here we are to kill you.
Well,
you
know? Who knows, right?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
They're who so knows? High profile. I would be scared to step foot in Japan if I was Rick, but like he said...
He said he is scared.
He'd rather be watering plants, but...
But a man's got to do what a man's got to do. Those were his words.
Gotta love him, right? It's just pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And like he said, in Japan now, before it was such a hush-hush issue, but now it's exploded so big since they won the Oscars that, you know, the kids in Japan are going to theaters to watch this film.
It just opened in theaters. I think in June, which is really the big, you know, that's part of a major achievement, right? Because before that, they weren't showing it, right? They had a limited showing once last year, remember? And the mayor attended.
Taiji, actually.
Yeah, and he walked out.
He walked out. And, you know, the young people were cheering. They were asking questions.
So, as young people will, right?
Yeah, I'm quite surprised because I thought, you know, like this whole nationalist thing is very well respected in Japan, that they wouldn't even let this film be shown there. So this is quite a feat for them, I think.
Yeah,
And also, Rick has mentioned that the dolphin drives aren't just in Taiji in Japan. Okay. They're in other places. So the educational efforts that they'll be making elsewhere in Japan will get to those other places as well.
That's
so
great.
That, you know, it's not just about Taiji. It's about these other places. And remember, he said there are 50 dolphinariums in Japan.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Japan's a tiny country, right? It's really just hard to believe. It's crazy. So that's some interesting news, and I'm sure we'll be hearing. That's only in 4 days.
Yeah.
September 1st. It's hard to believe it's coming up. They've been advertising this since the Oscars and getting all the support on board. Once again, I just would like to bring to your attention the opportunity to keep the Animal Voices show running on the air. If you support the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, we ask of you to please show us your support by becoming a member of Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your membership donations to keep the show running. To become a member, just simply go to coopradio.org, where it will show you how to sign up, and remember to indicate Animal Voices on your donation form. That ensures that the money gets to our show to keep our show running. We thank you in advance for your monetary support, and it doesn't matter how much or how little you contribute for your membership. Every little bit helps. Joanne, you would like to talk about the upcoming walk for farm animals.
Yeah, before I start on that, I just want to make a correction of something I said last week, which was that I said that dairy cows are slaughtered at 4 months old. What I meant to say was 4 years old. Their pregnancy period is 9 months, so they go through like three cycles, and then, you know, by the time they're four or five, they're slaughtered. And somebody actually pointed out to me yesterday, one of our listeners. So
yay, we have listeners.
That's great, because I listened
to the show again last week. I didn't notice that. So
yeah, well, I edited it out before we put it on the website. So the upcoming Walk for Farm Animals, it's a very exciting event we have once a year. And this year is going to happen on September 25th. What it is that you can register and raise funds for Farm Sanctuary. Farm Sanctuary, of course, is North America's largest animal rescue sanctuary, exclusively for farm animals, so food animals.
And they were the ones that actually started the Farm Sanctuary movement.
Mm-hmm. So they have two sanctuaries, one in New York, one in California, and together they house, I think, over 1,000 animals rescued from factory farms and slaughterhouses. So they're a great organization to support. And this walk is an annual fundraiser event that happens all throughout North America and in various cities. If you want to register, go to firstgiving.com/farmsanctuary. And once you register, you can make a web page where you can ask people to donate to you for doing the walk. The walk, like I said, is September 25th, downtown Vancouver, in front of the art gallery on the Georgia Street site. We're all going to gather around 12:30 to do your check-in, and at 1 o'clock, the walk starts. When you register, you will get a t-shirt by Vote Couture, which is like a high-end vegan fashion designer. And they sell t-shirts for like $300.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Wow.
So when you register for Walk for Farm Animals, it's $15 to register, and you get this amazing Vote Couture t-shirt. Probably the only one you'll own. Most people don't spend $300. So that's very exciting. And this year we're asking people to please bring noisemakers. You know, if you have costumes, bring costumes. If you have noisemakers,
blow horns.
Well, something a little bit more musical, maybe. Like if you have a Tupperware and you can drum or something. If you have drums, make sure it's not like made of animal hide, because that would be kind of disrespectful. And if you have I don't know, what else do people have? Tambourines.
I have a clarinet.
You have a bring the clarinet. You can lead the walk. With your clarinet.
Have to come up with some kind of Walk for Farm Animals musical theme.
Musical theme,
basically,
yeah.
It's a lot of fun. We've had, we've done it 3 years now. Is that right?
5 years.
5 years? Oh, yeah. I've only done it for 3 years. I don't Did I even know about it before that? Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Were you there the first year we did it on Commercial Drive?
No, I've done it the last 3 years. I don't remember the 2 years before that. I must have been asleep or something. But wow.
Yeah, so we raise a lot of money. And then, of course, the day after that, Jean Bauer, who is the co-founder of Farm Sanctuary, is going to be doing a talk.
Yep.
And there's an event. It's called Gimme Shelter. And I don't know where it's posted.
I've seen it on Facebook.
Yeah. Post it on our Facebook.
Yeah, we'll do that.
To help promote it.
That's a good idea. I'll write that down.
And right now, it's not available to the public yet, but
you're going to leak it?
I'm going to leak it because it's not available, right? Only members of Liberation BC. So if you're a member of Liberation BC
sign up today.
There's only 30 spaces available for this intimate dinner with Jean Bauer, the co-founder of Farm Sanctuary. So it's a huge deal. And if you're a member, you receive the email, but you never opened it, please do open your email.
I opened it right away and registered immediately.
I know, you're the first one to register, actually.
I didn't want to miss it.
It's $50 per person, and all the money, all the proceeds go to Farm Sanctuary and their rescue work. So if you're not a member, we are going to open up the process to the remaining tickets to people by September 5th.
All right. Thanks, Joanne. And now I have our travel tips and recommendations. Oh, actually, sorry. It's Carissa's news. Sorry, Carissa. I jumped the gun a little bit. Go ahead, Carissa.
That's okay. All right. So Prime Minister Stephen Harper was in Charlottetown last Friday and took a stand against the European Union's declared ban on seal products despite a court ruling ordering the ban to be stayed in anticipation of legal challenges. Harper claims the ban to be completely unfair and discriminatory treatment of a Canadian industry that employs people of modest means who are being targeted by environmental extremists based on extremists. Complete misinformation. Harper also said that the Canadian government will continue to defend the interests of the seal industry workers because they respect the same kind of humanitarian considerations that are present in other areas of animal husbandry, and that they should not be targeted like this, and the government of Canada will continue to speak out in their defense. All the more reason for the compassionate among us to continue to speak out in defense of the seals who cannot do so for themselves.
You know, I read an article about that, and a couple of things which you pointed out spoke out to me. Number one was Stephen Harper calling these people like us, extremists.
Yeah.
So it's not extreme to beat baby, like, seals on the head and make them bleed.
The entire European Union is made of extremists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that really got to me, what was it? Something else. I can't remember it right now. But anyways, there was... it's just crazy. Just like, the practices, he said we're just following normal practices. He said we're following normal animal husbandry practices. That doesn't make it right, you know.
Yeah.
No. We also used to, slavery used to be normal too, right?
Yeah.
And we've progressed through the times.
Okay, and cats and ferrets are being used as training devices at St. Louis Children's Hospital with plastic tubes repeatedly forced down their windpipe.
What?
This is not only cruel, but completely unnecessary, as the hospital already owns sophisticated and more educational human-like simulators that students could learn on. The animals who are subjected to this procedure can often endure bleeding, pain, swelling, scarring, collapsed lungs, and even death. If you would like to be a voice for animals, you can help them be heard by calling the St. Louis Children's Hospital President Lee Fetter at 314-454-4253 and politely urge him to show compassion and put an end to the use of cats and ferrets in the hospital's training programs. I know, that one's crazy, right?
Yeah, like they're sticking tubes down their throats for training.
It's to teach them how to do that to children in the hospital.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's ridiculous. And they're alive and everything, obviously. Yeah. Wow.
And finally, Michael Schneider of Maple Ridge appeared in Port Coquitlam Provincial Court on Monday, pleading guilty to animal cruelty charges stemming from the discovery of his emaciated golden retriever back in February. The dog was named Trooper by SPCA staff because of his resilience, as when he was brought in, he weighed a mere 10.7 kilograms, which was less than half his appropriate weight for his breed and age. He was covered in his own feces with matted fur and a choke chain that was several sizes too small and had to be cut off of him. He was very accurately described as a walking skeleton. Dr. Adrian Walton of the Dewdney Animal Hospital said that if Trooper hadn't been turned into the SPCA, he likely would have died within days. Snyder was sentenced to pay a $2,000 fine and $452 to the SPCA for his crimes and is banned from owning pets for the next 10 years. Criminal animal cruelty charges, which could carry a possible jail sentence of 6 months, were stayed because of the guilty plea. General Manager of Cruelty Investigations for the SPCA, Marcy Moriarty, said that she would have liked to have seen some jail time. Something tells me she's not the only one.
Yeah, I was really surprised that he didn't get jail time, but actually maybe I shouldn't be surprised because I think that's generally not something that's done, right? I mean, good, he's not allowed to own an animal for 10 years, but still, he deserves to be punished just like other people are punished for abusing humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? I just think it's ridiculous. Thanks for the news, Carissa.
Yeah, thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio here on 102.7 FM, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And now I have part three of our series of travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating. And at this time, I have the pleasure of talking to you about Portland, Oregon, which is often described as the vegan mecca of North America.
Sure is.
Yeah. And this year, made number two in PETA's list of the most veg-friendly cities in North America. Again, in talking about compassionate eating, what I'm referring to is choosing the foods that you eat that cause the least harm possible to your fellow creatures. This is part of the vegan lifestyle, which follows a diet free of animal products and the many cruelties towards animals that come with that, which we often talk about here on the show. When traveling away from the comfort zone of your home and familiar surroundings, it is sometimes hard to always be able to eat compassionately, but with some planning and forethought, it can be done. Whenever I travel, I always take the time to do some pre-planning about where and how to eat on my trips, and this actually becomes part of the fun travel experience to see and try new places to get vegan food to eat in our vast world of options. Now, fortunately, it just so happens that the options are hugely abundant in Portland when it comes to compassionate eating. By my count, there are 23 vegan restaurants in the city, which includes the city's wealth of street food carts, and close to 30 vegetarian restaurants, which puts Portland pretty high up there in terms of catering to the non-animal product eating crowd. But it doesn't stop there. They also have a vegan grocery store, tattoo shop, clothing store, bar, daycare, and two hair salons. How many other cities can say that? Well, none to be exact. So to put it simply, it's always a treat to visit the vegan capital of Portland, as there are always new places to check out there. And this summer, I had the opportunity to visit the city for the third time, which I will share my experiences about today in the short time that we have to provide some recommendations for you. I had several new finds of places to eat on this trip to Portland, and perhaps the most surprising was the vegan eatery called Prasad. Surprising because I was actually looking for another vegan restaurant that used to be here, Blossoming Lotus, and was taken aback to find that this newish, almost vegan restaurant here instead, which actually was kind of similar to Blossoming Lotus, but it's with its ample selection of raw food as well as fresh and clean cooked food. They are open in the morning until 8 p.m. and probably get a lot of business from the clientele of the yoga studio with which they share their space. So there is a small breakfast menu plus an offering of hearty soups, salads, rice bowls, wraps, and even some sweet treats for dessert. They also have a large selection of freshly squeezed juices and smoothies with nut milk or organic rice milk, plus some teas and coffees. After a good perusal of the menu, I ended up choosing the chili bowl with Bhutanese red rice instead of quinoa, roasted garlic chili, steamed greens, scallions, and green chili and garlic tahini sauces. This hearty meal was moderately priced at $8, and was it ever worth it? First, I had never had, or I don't think even heard of Bhutanese red rice before. So that was a winning experiment. I love the firm texture of it as well as its pretty red color, and it went so well with the delicious roasted garlic chili, the greens, and the green and white zesty sauces, which really enhanced the taste of the meal. What a score. And this was one of the best meals I had had in a long time, and it was filling as well. I would definitely like to come back here in the future to try out their chipotle tempeh scramble for breakfast. The service was quick and friendly, and the food was delicious. After eating at Prasad, I continued east on foot, as I was a woman with a mission, and that was to acquire some of the most coveted doughy rings of deep-fried vegan goodness to be found in the Pacific Northwest. Lo and behold, after years of only dreaming about these orbicular treats, I was finally going to visit the magical Portland place known as Voodoo Donut. And Joanne's salivating as I say this.
Yes.
Evidently, I was not the only person on this special mission, as when I arrived there, a lineup of no less than 20 people preceded me, waiting patiently outside the entrance of the store to be granted access to all the donuts they could muster to purchase at once. While we were waiting for at least a good half hour, one guy even left the establishment carrying a huge bucket overflowing with donuts and proudly declaring to us all, $5! As he took off with his bounty of day olds. Finally, after waiting and waiting, I was granted entrance to the shop and was met with a huge menu of options to choose from before I made it to the front of the line. I should mention that Voodoo Donut is not an exclusively vegan donut shop. It sells donuts of both the vegan and dairy and egg variety, but I have to say that their vegan donut menu is quite plentiful, and they also offer a large selection of vegan yeast donuts in addition to cake donuts, which are quite difficult to find being sold anywhere else. Apart from loving my mom's homemade yeast donuts, I should also mention that I've actually grown up hating donuts in general. The sight, smell, and unhealthful taste of them ever since I worked at a bakery at my first job when I was 14.
That will do it.
Gleaning smell after sight of these pathetic looking blobs of fried dough on a daily basis. It was a real gross out for me.
So, the yeast donuts, are they the fluffy ones?
Yes, the fluffy ones. Not the ones that are like cake. They're the ones that are like
cake. I like the yeast donuts.
Yeast donuts. Yeah. Okay. So, plus I typically avoid fried food, since it's nothing but unhealthful, empty calories. So I wonder what it is that draws me to vegan donuts. And they have to be vegan yeast donuts. Regardless of the deep frying, regardless of the fat, something about them being animal product free speaks to me and makes me crave these sweet, bad foods of the mainstream that I'm so often without. You know, we vegans like our fat and sugar-laden foods too, and the fact that no animals were harmed in the making of these donuts just calls to me as something I should pay my undivided attention and appetite to. So what did I end up leaving the donut shop with? Well, I will tell. At first, I was only going to get a half dozen donuts, but then I decided on 8, and then somehow the girl at the counter duped me into buying a full dozen. But I can't say that I fought back when I found out she was giving me 12, which I think only came to about $12.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could eat that all by myself.
They have deals. I almost did. So it was an assortment of 12 yeast vegan donuts, which included the simple glaze, to the maple cream filled, to the chocolate covered Long Johns, to purple frosting and purple sprinkled covered rings. As for the verdict of how they tasted, I can honestly say the taste was exactly no different than the traditional dairy and egg-laden donuts that make up 99.999% of the world's donuts. Just as gooey, just as decadent, just as doughy and sweet. Not a difference. So this brings me to wonder, why aren't all donuts free of animal products? Can you imagine where our world would be if suddenly all of the donuts in the world were no longer made with the cow's milk and chicken's eggs that contribute to so much of the animal suffering in the world? I say we need to start a revolution where demand for such products of free of animals, because they don't need to be, is made. Perhaps it's places like the popular Voodoo Donut that can make this happen. Finally, I will talk about another new find on my afternoon venture out in downtown Portland, which was a vegan Chinese restaurant called Vegetarian House. This place was only a few blocks away from the donut store, and plus I needed to get something for dinner to take back to the hotel that would satisfy my boyfriend's appetite. So vegan Chinese it was. You can't go wrong with Chinese, right?
No, it's always good. It's like pizza, right? You just can't go wrong with that.
Exactly. Like most vegan Chinese menus I've seen, the one here at Vegetarian House was just as plentiful, with dozens of different plant-based dishes to choose from, including many varieties of mock meats. After scanning all the options, I settled on the tofu and brown sauce, the sweet and sour chicken, and the fried veggie shrimp appetizers. The service was again fast and friendly, and in a short amount of time, the server gave me my food to go, and I was then off on the streetcar to make my way back to the hotel for dinner. And as proof of the faux meat's convincibility, my boyfriend was even fooled into thinking that he was eating the real thing when I gave him the sweet and sour chicken and shrimp, which I neither confirmed nor denied until after it was all hungrily devoured.
What? He thought you would feed him real shrimp?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking. I'm just like, yeah, sure. Just eat it and let me know what it's like. So if that isn't a testament to the value of food, I don't know what is. Value of the food. I would definitely recommend this place. It's your standard vegan Chinese fare, and there's nothing wrong with that. And those are my recommendations for Portland this time around.
Wow.
Yeah. So what have you enjoyed in Portland?
You know what? Joanne? I've only really been to Portland once, and it was during last the year. Conference, and yeah. I was only out, you know, for a few hours. I was
talking. We went to the By and By.
We went to the By and By, which is amazing. It's like a bar, a vegan bar.
It is a bar, a full-fledged
bar. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It's just like a normal bar, but it's all vegan food.
And the difference between, I guess, Portland vegan food and Vancouver Portland food, my husband and I talk about this all the time, is that Vancouver, we tend to be all like healthy, raw, and like hippie. And like in Portland, they're like, they just throw health out the window. It's just whatever tastes good.
Decadence.
And you have the deep fried donuts.
Yeah.
You have the beer.
By the way, I gained 2 pounds after eating most of those donuts in 2 days, but it was worth it.
Oh, yeah. That's good 2 pounds to gain. I mean, geez, you gain that much drinking water, so why not eat donuts and gain that?
Yeah, I did eventually lose it, so it was well worth it. So that's our travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating for Portland this time. And Carissa, you have some events for us. Carissa? We need to get Carissa on the air, John. Thank you. There she is.
Hi.
Okay, so now I have the events. So this coming Saturday and Sunday, August 28th and 29th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on both days, there is a garage sale fundraiser for the nonprofit group Skinned. The location is 8249 Shaughnessy Street, which is one block east of 67th and Oak in Vancouver, B.C. Skinned is Vancouver's grassroots anti-fur group, and they are having a garage sale to raise much-needed monies for a video unit. There will be lots of useful, gently used items, both decorative and functional, for both adults and children. Skinned also has a wonderful gift basket they will be raffling away, full of cruelty-free body shop goodies like mango scrub, mango butter, lavender oil, and home fragrance oil. The basket is an $80 value, and tickets are $2 each or 3 for $5. If you would like to purchase tickets, you can call Ray at 604-325-5092 or email her at saynotofur2001@yahoo.ca.
I just want to say that we had Ray on the show several weeks ago, and she keeps moving up the garage sale. So the date I had said originally was supposed to be a couple weeks ago.
That's what I thought,
too. Last week it was supposed to be raining, and actually weekend it's raining, but oh well, I think it'll...
Maybe
I
that's hope, a good thing that she has more stuff now.
Yeah, I hope people didn't show up at her door or something.
Well,
or just donated money, right?
Yeah.
So all monies raised through the raffle will also be going to the purchase of the video unit. And you can also donate your items to the garage sale fundraiser by contacting Ray at 604-325-5092 or, again, emailing her at saynotofur2001@yahoo.ca. Also on Saturday, August 28th at 7 p.m. on CBC TV is To Be or Not To Be, which is a documentary that explores the decline of honeybee populations around the world and whether or not they can be saved. Could bees be an early warning sign of a larger problem with our ecology? Are they the canary in the coal mine for the health of the planet Earth? Follow the buzz, starting with Pennsylvania beekeeper David Hackenberg's public admission in 2006 that more than half of his honeybee hives had died of a mysterious disease, and around the world to investigate the strange and myriad causes extinguishing the lives of bees and colonies alike. To Be or Not To Be is directed by Mark Johnston and produced by Natalie Dubois and Christine Legoff for Gala Film Productions.
You know, I could be wrong. Didn't Einstein say something like it's the beginning of the end of life when bees start to go away or something like that?
Sounds like something he would say.
It does sound like something he'd say, and anyway. It sounds scary.
Continue.
Yes. So Vancouver Meatless Meetup is going to the Art Gallery this coming Tuesday night, which is August 31st, with a dine out at Nuba to follow. The Vancouver Art Gallery entry is by donation on Tuesday nights with a suggested donation of $10 after 5 p.m. So the meetup group will be gathering at 4:45 p.m. and there will be a sign that says Earth Save Meetup to guide you. After everyone has had a chance at a final view of the Modern Woman exhibit, as this is its last week at the Art Gallery, including paintings by Degas and Renoir, among others, the group will be heading to Nuba for dinner, which is located at 207 West Hastings Street. The reservation is for 6:30 p.m., and you can RSVP via the Vancouver Meatless Meetup group on meetup.com or Facebook if you plan to attend. And as Joanne was speaking about earlier, coming up in September is Liberation BC's Walk for Farm Animals, sponsored by local vegan store Carmivore. The time to register is now, so you can start your fundraising efforts in time for the walk on September 25th. Registration is $15 in advance or $20 the day of. If you have any questions, you can email them to vancouver@walkforfarmanimals.org or call Becky at 778-991-7615.
I just want to reiterate that it's a lot of fun, so you should do it. It's so much fun to be able to march in the streets and declare your love for farm animals and make noise and let people know about it, because we wear signs and people, you know, they do honk their horns in support, and we're going to be in downtown Vancouver this
year. It's a really friendly event, so it doesn't look like a protest.
It's not a protest event for people who are wondering. It's a celebration event.
Yeah, last year we had a guy in stilts, and we had people out with their dogs and their kids.
And a lot of people dressed as
Mardi Gras.
Animals.
And Mardi Gras.
Yeah, Mardi Gras.
The duck. Mardi Gras the duck.
And my picture taken with them.
Aw. We'll have cows this year, too.
Cool.
Thanks, Carissa.
Oh, just to let everyone know, if you have an animal event or vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced on the show, please email the details to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver. For our feature interview today, we have Dr. Donald Forrester on the show, who is a physician member of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. The PCRM is a not-for-profit organization of doctors and laypersons working together for compassionate and effective medical practice, research, and health promotion. As part of the work they do, one initiative of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine is the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart Program, which is a program designed for anyone who wants to explore and experience the health benefits of a vegan diet. The next 21-Day Vegan Kickstart program kicks off in 10 days on September the 6th. Hello, Dr. Forrester, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to join you.
We have you here today to talk to us about some of the health benefits of a vegan diet, as well as the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart program. But to start, could you please tell us a little bit more about the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine?
Yes, it was founded in 1985 by Dr. Neil Barnard. It's a nonprofit organization that today consists of over 100,000 members, as you mentioned, physicians, healthcare professionals, veterinarians, and compassion laypeople, who support the work to advocate for ethical research in cruelty to animals and promote life-saving nutrition policies and practices and research.
That sounds wonderful. With all of the nutritional and medicinal information going around these days, as people have access to multiple resources such as the internet and television and other media sources, as well as their own doctors, it seems that just exactly what is good for the body can be confusing to know at times, and I can understand this. I think a lot of people really don't know what to believe or what information to believe, or they think they do and are perhaps listening to the wrong informational sources. So I'd like to know what your take is on this and what you think a person needs to do to be responsible for their own health and equipped with the information they need to know as it pertains to what food and nutrition they put into themselves.
No, you're right. It is very confusing and it's very important. My take is that over the last 20 years, we've learned a lot about nutrition. There are about 5,000 peer-reviewed scientific articles every year that come out on nutrition alone. Having practiced medicine for over 30 years, I've seen the complexity of medicine increase, such that over 10,000 new articles on medicine come out every week. So I think people need to get accurate information on the best prevention strategies by finding scientific-based, reliable sources of information that can bring this sort of large bit of information together in a useful format that assists them in changing their habits to be healthier.
Do you think it's important that people be their own health advocates rather than just listening to their doctors?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's difficult for physicians to keep up as it is for lay people. And just as a primary care physician, a family medicine doc, I'd have to read 30 to 40 articles every day just to keep current. And one study showed that physicians make lifestyle recommendations to their patients based on whether they understand the science and whether they believe the patients will make the changes. When I give talks to the professionals on this, they get the science pretty quickly, but they're always sort of doubtful that the patients are willing to make the changes. So if the patients become more educated and bring the issue up with their physicians and show an interest, they'll get the best results. And so basically informed patients working with their physicians, I think, is the best combination.
I think that's great advice. The PCRM promotes following a vegan diet for better health. Can you talk to us just in general about some of the health benefits of vegan diets versus a diet of meat, dairy, and eggs?
Surely. If you follow a plant-based diet, you will be less likely to have heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, cancer, macular degeneration, kidney stones, osteoporosis, some of the autoimmune disorders like rheumatoid arthritis, not to mention avoiding all the foodborne illnesses like the recent salmonella you read about in the papers these days. A great resource for your listeners who aren't familiar with it is a book on nutrition and their association with various diseases, and it's a book called The China Study by T. Colin Campbell.
Yeah, that's a book that I certainly recommend. So many people have that I know who have read it have really said that was a book that really educated them, for sure, the China Study.
I think even beyond that, too, is that, you know, by going plant-based, you're going to get rid of the 18 to 40% of our greenhouse gases that are, you know, helping mess up the environment, which is a little bit more indirectly related to the health of your listeners.
And very directly related, you're saving lots of animals, of course. Can you tell us about some of the scientific research that shows that health benefits increase as the amount of food from animal sources in the diet decreases, making vegan diets the healthiest overall?
Yeah, there are really two types of studies. There's some population studies, such as the Lion's Heart Study, Adventist population studies, and the actual China study, which was done in China, where you're studying groups of populations of people, because when you're dealing with an area as complicated as nutrition and as complex as human behavior, you have to study things a little differently than we've done in traditional science. For instance, there was a study once that showed that nurses who had high beta carotene in their blood, which is a type of antioxidant, didn't get as many lung cancers. So they did a study where they actually gave people beta carotene, but they actually had more lung cancers by taking it. So it's a very complicated area. So the population studies help overcome some of those narrow focus type studies. And so the population studies are one type. A second type are the studies that have been done on specific diseases that show that going on plant-based diets can reverse or stabilize the major diseases like coronary artery disease, diabetes, and high blood pressure, and it can also slow the growth and reoccurrence of certain cancers, as well as some of the other diseases and conditions like obesity, osteoporosis, macular degeneration, dementia, polycystic ovarian syndrome, early onset puberty, just to name some that have been in the publications and media lately.
As I understand, heart disease and cancer are the number one and two causes of death in humans in North America. They're really the big killers. Can you tell us about meat and dairy's contribution to these two diseases specifically, and how following an animal product-free diet can play an important role in preventing these?
Sure. Let's take heart disease first, a little less complicated. But in the 1980s, we learned that heart disease was related to cholesterol and the various effects on the lining of the arteries in the heart. In 1992, Dr. Dean Ornish showed that a mostly plant-based diet with moderate exercise could actually reverse the blockages. And then in 1995, Dr. Caldwell Esteman showed that you could actually stabilize the disease and not have another heart attack if patients followed a plant-based diet. He would occasionally have to use medications to achieve the goals, but very seldom did he have to do that. Subsequent studies have added to our understanding of heart disease. I mean, most people are sort of thinking about it as just the blockage in the arteries. But the main disease is actually the inflammation along the arteries itself. such that about 60% of heart attacks occur in vessels that are less than 50% blocked, so that you really have to cut the inflammation down, not just reverse the blockages, to be successful at reversing the disease. And as the years have gone by more recently, we've learned a little bit more about the importance of the omega-3s, which are the anti-inflammatory essential fatty acids that we need, relative to the omega-6s, which are the inflammatory fatty acids that we also need. But we tend to eat lots more of the omega-6s than 3s. And a good ratio of the omega-3s to 6s is important to prevent the damage to the arteries and cut down the irritation. And even some of the more recent studies have shown that even eating a saturated fat meal, which is mostly animal products, affects the arteries just within 30 minutes to an hour after meal. Mm-hmm. So we're learning a lot more in this area, but that's sort of the take-home message is, a plant-based diet will tend to prevent it, will tend to stabilize it, and can, in many instances, actually reverse it.
What about cancer?
Yeah, cancer is a little bit more complex because it involves sort of four stages. But consuming a plant-based diet can help in all these stages. First, you have the contacts with the cancer-causing agents. Animal and dairy products are the leading intake of carcinogens in your diet. As a vegan, I've been vegan for 4 years, vegetarian for 15 before that. As a vegan, I get 2% of the exposure that people who take a standard American-type diet, will get.
Wow.
So your first step is to avoid getting these things in your body in the first place. Once they're in your body, and there's so much of it out in the environment, we can't hardly avoid it, you can actually prevent the damage through the use of the antioxidants, which you find in plants. Plants create a lot of antioxidants to protect themselves from the side effects of photosynthesis, which generates a very high charged electrons in their cells, and they have to protect themselves. So we can take advantage of what they have created by eating plants. And there are thousands of these in plants, so you sort of want to eat a multiple different types of foods, different colors, and mix them up. Third is the actual mutation that occurs in the DNA that leads to the cancer cell itself, and that can be often repaired by the vitamins folate and B12. And if your listeners do go plant-based, vitamin B12 supplement is something that is recommended. Finally, once the cancer is growing, the rate is actually increased by animal protein, and in certain tumors like breast and prostate cancer, by female and male hormones. And these are both reduced in people who eat plant-based diets. So going plant-based diets will increase the fertilizer effect, as it were, of the animal protein and the hormonal effect in certain tumors. And finally, just to mention that fiber, which you find in plants, because fiber holds plants up and bones hold animals up, has a very favorable effect at both the contact stage and the growth stages. So those are sort of the ways that you can think about a plant-based diet helping to prevent both heart disease and cancer.
Thank you for that information. I'd like to talk about diabetes now, which is a disease that is so prevalent in our society these days, but yet so preventable. Can you tell us how a vegan diet can improve or even cure diabetes?
Yeah, it's an incredibly growing problem. And the science shows that type 2 diabetes is a sugar processing problem, because you have trouble processing your sugar, so it builds up in the blood. But it's caused primarily by fats in the diet. And the fats affect this by two ways. One is they actually interfere with the insulin, which is the hormone that sort of grabs your glucose out of your blood and throws it in your cell so your cell can get rid of it and use it for energy. But the fat gets in the cells and actually turns off the genes that run the mitochondria, which are these little engines in your cell that burn the sugar. So basically you've got a sugar processing problem that's caused by fat. So you can go vegan diet, and if you go vegan, of course, you eliminate all the fats from animal and dairy and eggs. But what you won't eliminate necessarily is all the fats in plants, because there's a lot of fats in plants. So it's important not just to go vegan, but to go low-fat vegan. And that's been shown to actually going on a low-fat vegan diet that avoids processed carbohydrates has been shown to better control diabetes and even lead to reversal. I certainly found this true in my practice, where I probably cured about 15 diabetics in the last 3 years of my practice. And one study shown by Dr. Neil Barnard recently in the last 2 years showed that the control for diabetics was much better on a low-fat vegan diet. And there was even one remarkable study in 1994 that showed that 17 of 21 patients with type 2 diabetes who had painful neuropathy in their legs for an average of 4 years on a low-fat vegan diet, 16, 17 of the 21 just reversed it and did away with their neuropathy in 16 days. So not only is it possible to prevent the disease or stabilize it, reverse it, and take less medications, but in some cases, it's actually able to reverse some of the damages done, which is really remarkable and very rewarding when you see that happening in your patients.
It really is. A lot of these health problems that we've been discussing can actually be prevented by following a healthy lifestyle, which largely includes proper nutrition. Where can listeners get more information and resources to be proactive about their health?
Well, you know, that's a tough one, but I would say some of the resources available out there, like the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, great website, general nutrition, especially diabetes and cancer. Much of the information can be downloaded for free. One research I found particularly valuable for my patients with diabetes or prediabetes is Neil Barnard's book on reversing diabetes. Mm-hmm. Another research is Dr. Michael Greger, the Director of Public Health and Animal Agriculture for the Humane Society. He does an annual clinical update, which are very informative, and all the proceeds go to the American Humane Society. John McDougall's website contains useful information. His April 2007 newsletter on protein is one of the best I've seen on that whole question of how do I get my protein, do I need it, is it good for me? Jeff Novick, finally, is a registered dietitian whose website has DVDs on weight loss and label reading, which are not only very informative but very humorous as well.
Thanks for all of those resources. I'll definitely have to look some of those up. Let's talk about the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart Program. What does it consist of, and who can partake?
Well, anyone who has access to the Internet can sign up, and it provides useful, proven, daily educational material on moving to a plant-based diet.
So what is the inspiration behind the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart, and when did this program start?
Well, science inspired us to start the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart program. It was actually piloted in October of last year, and it's been done twice since then. 30,000 people have participated in the January Kickstart and another 30,000 in March. And we know this approach can help people lose weight and get healthy. Studies have shown that, as I sort of mentioned, that the plant-based diet can help you fight disease, improve your immune system, fight obesity, increase energy. Most people know the benefits of eating, a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, grains and legumes, but they don't know where to start. So it's a very practical program that we've partnered with leading researchers and celebrity coaches to create a sort of a step-by-step guide to provide all the knowledge and support you need to follow a healthy plant-based diet over a week period.
I just want to remind our listeners that this is the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Now, as part of the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart program, it's 21 days, and from what I can see, there's a 21-day meal plan. Can you talk to us about this? Are all of the meals planned out, and what do you need to do to prepare for the program?
You don't need much preparation at all. We provide a 21-day meal plan and grocery list. In this September, we're actually focusing a back-to-school theme, which will focus on easy-to-prepare meals for individuals and families. We know how busy people are. An interactive restaurant guide will show you what to order if you dine out, looking for something to grab, something on the go. This feature is great because it enables Kickstarters to search and nominate their favorite restaurants by zip code, so they actually share information with others.
And I understand that there's also social support through a message board where nutrition professionals answer your health questions. Can you tell us about that? It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's a community forum, and the coaches are part of the every day you get information. There's different coaches telling their story and sharing their secrets and explaining why to follow a plant-based diet is important to them. But also, on the community forum, it's monitored every 24 hours. And any of your questions that you ask are monitored by a team of registered dietitians and physicians for immediate feedback to people who ask the questions. Having participated in it, you sort of sign up with different forums depending on what you're interested in. And you can sort of see other people asking questions and getting answers. And it's sort of a community support group, which is kind of interesting to participate in. There's also a physician forum, which is something that Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine does on a regular basis, but they open it up to all Kickstart participants, and there'll be two pediatricians, Dr. Jay Gordon and Dr. Leslie Brown, who'll be available, because a lot of families with kids have a lot of questions about back to school with the kids and things like that.
And that sounds great. So regarding the 21-day meal plan, do you have to follow the plan that's set out for you in order to achieve this program?
It's more of a guideline, actually. You know, people's dietary habits are very complex and individualized, and each family has the way of going about doing things. So what I've seen with some of the participants or heard, you know, as participating in some of the community forums, some people sort of jump in both feet and sort of follow it just like it's laid out. Other people will sort of experiment and pick and choose.
Now, does the application also track calories?
We get that question a lot. Actually, you know, it's interesting. No, because on a low-fat, plant-based diet, there is no need to count calories. The foods we suggest, which are fruits, vegetables, beans, mm-hmm. whole grains, they're low in glycemic, which means the sugars don't get into your body fast like a processed sugar. They're rich in fiber, so it makes you feel satisfied, and as a result, you end up cutting back calories without even thinking about it. It's called an ad libitum diet, which means you can eat whenever you're hungry. The one thing you sort of find is sometimes that you're eating a little bit more frequently during the day. You're sort of more like grazing instead of just eating one or two or three meals a day. So this is sort of why it's a very low-fat vegan diet, and the research has been shown to be easy to stick to because you're not having to spend a lot of your time counting calories, portion sizes, or trying to limit your intake because your body is very hardwired to avoid being hungry. It's very hard to overcome that.
You know, I've heard of many, many people who have lost weight by following a vegan diet. They're most likely following the standard American diet and then going straight to a low-fat vegan diet. Of course, you're going to see benefits, right? But how much weight do people normally lose on this program, and what are some of the other health benefits?
Well, they typically lose about a pound a week. And, you know, so my patients often would notice that their energy level goes up dramatically. Mm-hmm. And the reason we sort of picked 3 weeks is it's important to get away from some of the foods like dairy and meat and cheeses and processed foods, which is actually shown to biochemically have some addicting type qualities. And if you go 3 weeks away from these sort of foods, your taste buds change.
Right.
Many of people who've gone from like high fat milk to low fat milk or gotten away from certain things, and then they've noticed, gee, after a month I don't even crave those things anymore. So in addition to increasing their energy and losing weight, they'll reduce their risk of heart disease, stroke, and improve their overall health.
Can anyone follow this program? And we were talking about children before. Is it safe for children or people with health problems?
Yes, anyone can follow this program. It's a safe diet for young children, teens, adults, even pregnant women. I have a daughter right now who's pregnant who's following this. Actually went through her pregnancy with our first grandchild, and he came out fine. It can also help people with existing problems such as diabetes. Although, you know, any dietary changes, if you have medical conditions, should be made in consultation with your physicians. So it's suitable for everybody. The American Medical Association supports a plant-based diet at every stage of life. And the Kickstart program, you know, provides motivation, support, role models, mm-hmm. features for all ages. They have one of the clips last time was a little cartoon. We have a list of dorm-friendly foods and healthy snacks. Roy Friedman, author of Skinny Bitch, offers tips. And mm-hmm. John Sally, who's an NBA, ex-NBA player and have an iron person, and you know, Rip Estelin, who's a vegan firefighter, you know, these are the sort of coaches who are on, you know, every day they sort of highlight one of them with their story.
Right. So you have these celebrity coaches that are active in the program and interacting on the forums, and I understand there's daily e-tips and nutrition webcasts. It sounds like and it's all free, right?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it sounds like something that, I mean, I've signed up for it. I just want to see. It's so unusual that you find a meal plan that's vegan. I want to know what I should be eating. Who knows if I am or not, right? I am vegan, but I've signed up for it because I'm very curious and interested, because this is not something that is typical that you can find out there, and it's all free. So what advice do the celebrity coaches, athletes, and nutrition researchers have to offer?
Well, they each tell their own story. You know, everybody has their own stories, and patients learn a lot from stories, actually, and it helps motivate them to change, to see others that have done the same thing. You know, especially when you get some really big athlete up there telling you that, you know, you can be successful as an athlete without animal products. So, you know, they explain why, you know, it's important for them to follow up a plant-based diet, how they got started, some of the steps. Some of them even share when they backslid a little bit, and they offer motivational tips and secrets. You know, it's sort of just a community support. It's really a very fun program to participate in.
And what are some of the other features that the program offers?
Well, they're interactive videos. They help you prepare recipes, guides that show you how to shop in a grocery store, quizzes that check your nutritional knowledge, contests. There's some bonuses. They have celebrity voicemails and videos. You know, it's quite varied. So I think most people who participate in it can find what best works for them.
Right. Yeah, it seems like it's very flexible, and it really reaches out to a broad variety of people. So finally, how can people sign up and get involved in the program, Dr. Forrester?
They can go to www.21daykickstart.org, or you can visit the website at www.pcrm.org, or you know, just Google, you know, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and you'll see links, you know, to the 21-Day Kickstart program, plus all the free information that PCRM makes available, especially for diabetes, general nutrition, and also there's a link to the Cancer Org, Cancer Project, which is an interesting program for people who are trying to prevent cancer or live with cancer.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Forrester, for coming on the show to share with us information about the health benefits of a vegan diet, which I found extremely interesting, and the 21-Day Vegan Kickstart program, which commences on September the 6th. To sign up for this free online program, please go to 21daykickstart.org, and to find out more about the PCRM, you can visit their website at www.pcrm.org. Thank you, Dr. Forrester.
You're welcome. Have a nice day.
You too.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. And right now, I guess, just want to remind our listeners that if you've missed our show live, you can always hear the archives on animalvoices.org. We put all of our past shows on there. And also, something very exciting is that you can now download our podcast on iTunes by subscribing to Animal Voices Vancouver, or actually it's Animal Voices Radio Show on iTunes. And of course, Twitter, we have Animal Voices YVR, and as well as our Facebook page, which is now at what, 300 something?
337?
Yeah, we like to get more members on there. Definitely.
I check it daily, so please, some people get on there and join and surprise me, make me happy. It'll make my day.
Yeah, definitely. You know, just now when the doctor's on that, I really wanted to ask him a question, but I think we were out of time. It's
you know, I'm hoping to get another doctor from PCRM.
Yeah.
There's so many questions that I wanted to ask, and
you know,
time
one
is
thing
limited.
People talk about all the time is protein, and it just drives
that was one
me
of,
nuts.
Yeah, that was... You know, he was mentioning Dr. McDougall. I just put out a big paper, so maybe we'll get him.
Yeah, I want to just do a whole show on protein because everybody thinks they're lacking protein. And I just talked to like five vegetarians last night who are like, oh, I have to have my protein. I got to eat eggs. You know what? Eggs has like 7% of your protein intake, and like a cup of peas has 21%. So
wow. The fact is that if you follow a balanced vegan diet with enough calories, you will get enough protein and enough of the right kinds. That's all you need to know. And it's not like I try to track my protein and what amino acids I'm getting in that. And I'm healthy.
Most people are not lacking in protein.
We have too much protein.
Yeah, exactly. So about next week's show, I'm sure you're wondering. I've called a few people, haven't gotten any calls back yet, but we will be on live next week, and we'll have a good show for you
it's
regardless.
A surprise.
It's a surprise.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, take care. Have a good weekend.